all know that Wisconsin is America's dairy land. It says so on our license plates. But do you know how that came to be? We will talk this hour about the past, the present, and some about the future of our dairy industry in Wisconsin and how it has and continues to shape our life. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, October 4th. Every Friday at this time, we talk about something special about Wisconsin. And this week, since the World Dairy Expo is going on in Madison and thousands of dairy industry people and farmers are in town visiting and comparing notes, we thought that it would be a nice time to talk about the importance of the Wisconsin dairy farmer and how we became known as America's Dairy Land. And I hope that we can also share some fond memories and some present-day dairy delights along the way. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let me welcome our guest. We are very happy to have with us Ed Janis. He is the author of Creating Dairyland, How Caring for Cows Saved Our Soil, Created Our Landscape, Brought Prosperity to Our State, and Still Shapes Our Way of Life, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Ed is also the director of the People of Rural Wisconsin Project that we'll find out you can help produce. Good morning, Ed. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I love that idea of the public helping us produce, because that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Tell us what the People of Rural Wisconsin Project is all about.
I wish I knew. I call it, or we call it, a community listening project. So the idea is you could call it an oral history project, but really we're interested in understanding today in light of what came before. Just as I try to do in my book about dairying, we want to collect the voices of rural Wisconsin. And it's so frustrating because there's so many interesting people with such surprising stories out there that it's endless what we could do. So we're enlisting the public as volunteers to go out and talk to people they've always wanted to talk to but never had an excuse to talk to. So that old farmer down the road or the guy that's retired from the barber shop. And just go there and we'll teach you how to use a recorder and we'll tell you some stuff about history and so forth and then help you talk to those people. And then we're going to write a book, an e-book. We're calling it the book, the Great Book of Rural Wisconsin. And it's sort of, if you'll pardon the conceit, there are chapters. So a chapter may be on this barber in a small town. And you would hear his voice or the beautician. We interviewed a beautician recently. And you'd hear her voice. You'd read about her. You'd see pictures from her past. But you'd also be given a context for what they think about. And so sort of unpacking the minds and hearts of rural people.
Why did you want to focus on rural people?
Well, that's a good question. Having done this book, having a great fondness for rural Wisconsin, I was a dairy farmer for 2 years, and I fell in love with my neighbors and had found them surprisingly, for a city boy, I shouldn't be surprised, but I was surprised at how intelligent, thoughtful, and surprising they were as people. So I'm a city guy, and you think all the interesting stuff goes on in cities. Well, it ain't true. And so there's this vast pool of stories that I don't think get heard or listened to very often. And that's what we're trying to do. There's an endless number of people out there who will surprise you.
Well, you know, that interesting-looking barn that I drive by when I'm on my Sunday drive, I'm sure that the family that lives there does have some interesting stories, but that family that lives there might just say, well, what do I have to offer?
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. Some people don't like to talk about themselves, but I'll tell you a secret. You know this, sitting on that side of the microphone. Generally, people like to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
But what does it take? It takes someone who's interested in them. And I know a lot of people who are interested in each other, in other people, and especially in rural life, city people. So part of our project is to enlist city people to go out into the country and learn about their country cousins, as it were.
people.
Maybe someday we'll do it in reverse. We'll have country cousins come in and learn about us.
So this ebook, The Great Book of Rural Wisconsin, yeah. will have some text, but it's going to have have audio on it, so you can listen to the voice
oh, yes.
of the rural Wisconsinite.
Because, as you know, the voice is so much more informative than just the words. So you can listen to somebody, and it's almost the spacing between the syllables and the inflections and the emotion that comes through that is so informative.
Yeah, so if people are interested in getting involved...
Ah, now that's tricky. I guess our website is not up yet, so they could get in touch with me. Shall I give them my number?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that's
good. Okay, so it's 608-514-1496. 514-1496, or they can get in touch with the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service at the University in Marathon County in Wausau. And I'm in partnership with them. And so that's another good way to get in touch with
us. Well, you know what? You can also get in touch with us right now on the air. And what I'm interested in particularly, maybe not so much the city person who wants to volunteer, but
right.
I'm interested right now on air, maybe hearing some rural voices, and people can call in and talk about, since we're trying to focus a little bit more on the dairy farm.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe there's somebody who's listening right now, milking the cows, who wants to call in and tell us why you are a dairy farmer, and how hard is it? How gratifying is it? What's something we should know about a dairy farmer?
And what are perhaps some of our misconceptions about the way you think about and approach your work?
There we go. 1-800-642-1234. Did I just say something that was probably wrong, saying that a farmer was out right now maybe milking cows?
Well, I don't think that's wrong at all. Mm-hmm. It's getting late. Maybe they're already having breakfast. We used to start milking at, I think, 5:15. And I always thought that by 7:15, the day was half over.
Well, there we go. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tell us what it's like on your dairy farm. It would be great to hear from dairy farmers, as we are trying to focus in some this hour. Kind of a couple of things going on. Ed, you wrote this book. We'll talk about creating Dairyland, but also you have this this project going mm-hmm. on, the People of Rural Wisconsin Project. So kind of doing two things at once here.
Well, it's sort of a continuation of the book. Mm-hmm. I was very frustrated in writing the book that I had to limit the number of people I got to talk to and the number of kitchens I got to visit. So I thought, well, this is a great way to extend that
experience. Well, I think it's great. So did you grow up on a dairy farm, perhaps? That's another question for our listeners. Or maybe you still do, and you'd like to join us. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, October 4th. We are celebrating the dairy farm in Wisconsin during this hour, talking with Ed Janis, who is the author of the book Creating Dairyland and the director of the People of Rural Wisconsin Project. We welcome your questions, your memories, your way of life in rural Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Ed, before we go to the phones,
yeah.
I know you wrote a whole book on it, but maybe you can just give us the Cliff Note version as
right.
to how Wisconsin became America's Dairyland.
It is, in my opinion, as a historian, one of the most remarkable human development stories of all times. I mean, not just recent times. Wisconsin was in pretty sorry shape around the time after the Civil War. The land was becoming rapidly depleted. In fact, the great preachers preached against what they called soil mining. So Americans like to exploit and then move on. Dairying was introduced as the salvation of the soil and of the salvation of farmers. So it represented a whole new approach to agriculture and to human beings. And in many ways, with dairying in Wisconsin was the epitome of the Enlightenment, the French Enlightenment, and the progressive ideal in Wisconsin. It was the first and probably best example of this transformation that we know as the Wisconsin idea, where working men and women became educated. And that education provided them with unheard of wealth and prosperity. And that was the idea, to create this new kind of person who was scientific, had this sort of industrial rectitude. We don't like to talk about agriculture as industrial, but it was a very important component in transforming Wisconsin from a real train wreck in the happening because of wheat to the prosperity we see today. The other part of my book, I think, that's really, to me, really struck me is that cows, in a sense, created Wisconsin. I say that title of the book. And it's a conceit of mine, but I think in many ways it's true. Not only did cows create the landscape, so you look out at these fields and you see the barns and the silos and the grain and all, but our mentality, our moral rectitude, our moral approach to living. So dairying was introduced as an antidote to this disaster that had been taking place, and it really the first sustainability movement.
And though we have this relatively small state compared to some,
right,
and all these wonderful things happen, and this little tiny state becomes this leading producer of milk and cheese, and it becomes America's Dairyland.
It was a brilliant move, a brilliant economic development move. Obviously, it wasn't thought out much in advance, but we have some tremendous advantages, of course, the weather being one of them, the soil being the other. And we started our dairy industry at a point in history that was most auspicious. So the world was becoming wealthier and could afford protein. We became, at one point, the great provider of protein to the world, at least not meat protein, not flesh. Mm-hmm. But and milk became safe. At the turn of the century, last century, milk was a very dangerous product. And was avoided in many ways, especially by city people, and the cities were getting bigger. So with pasteurization, just at the point that Wisconsin was becoming the dairy state, this huge market opened up because of pasteurization.
Well, we that can open up a
yeah,
debate,
I know.
We won't necessarily go there this hour. We've talked about the raw milk debate before.
Okay.
Let's take a call, though, from Dan in New Glarus. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Are you a dairy farmer?
Yes, I am. And actually, Ed has...
Hey! How are you?
My wife and I. I'm
yeah,
good. How are you, Ed?
Good.
Yes. And so I wanted to talk about how dairying has changed for me. I'm a fifth-generation dairy farmer, and how it's changed for me since I was a kid until now. I've taken over the business from my parents, and... I love what I do every day. I love working with the cows, growing the crops. I love the challenge of it, and there are plenty of those. But it's gotten a lot more difficult since when I was a kid, back in the 70s and 80s.
Why is it more difficult?
Well, expenses have gotten so much higher as a percentage of our income. When my parents were farming, expenses ate up about 50% of the income. The other 50% could be put towards a purchase of farm and raising a family. And in the last decade or so, that number has increased to about 70 to 80%. So our margins have decreased dramatically. Therefore, our financial risk is a lot higher. So to counter that, a lot of farms, including mine, including myself, we've had to increase the size of our herds. And sometimes people look at us askance a little bit, wondering, well, why are you expanding? Because they have, some people have the attitude that big farms are bad, and they like the quaint red Wisconsin dairy barn and small herds, and why wouldn't we still be doing it that way? And, well, we don't necessarily grow just for the fun of it and because we want to work harder, because clearly we're working plenty hard already, but it's just to try to remain viable and profitable. Another thing I wanted to touch upon was Ed was talking about how the dairy farm related to the environment or something like that, and we try to be sort of a closed loop, at least nutrient-wise, where we're harvesting crops and nutrients off of the land, putting them through the cows, producing a nutritious product for the consumers, and then recycling the nutrients back onto the land, and also trying to protect the soil and the environment at the same time. And it's a challenge, but it's something that most dairy farmers take very seriously.
Dan,
go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
I wanted to ask you about the size of your farm. You say you have to expand to stay afloat. How big is your farm, and how is it just the family working on it, or give us a sense of the scope of the operation?
Sure. Well, back in the 60s through, I guess, the 90s, we were a 50 to 60 cow herd. Then over the next decade or so, we grew to 180 cows, and then just recently, just in the last year, we've expanded to close to 400 cows.
Yeah, and you have a business involved here?
Yeah, it's quite a business.
But so it's
it
a family,
family
business.
Labor and, well, it is, yes.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
Yes, I've purchased it from my parents, but my father still works for me. My brother works with us part-time, but now we also have four full-time employees, mainly for milking, and a part-timer or two. So so we're supporting more people off of it, but it's still absolutely a family business.
Yeah. Dan, if you want to stay on, that'd be great. Dan mentions a number of really interesting things, and that is, I mentioned earlier, I believe dairying was introduced as a sustainability movement. And our dairy farmers, of all the forms of agriculture, are, you must say, the most sustainable. This idea that everything keeps going back into the business, into the soil, is hugely important. And the other thing, that the controversy about growing larger, I have to remind people as a historian that nothing stays the same. That a 12-cow herd, a 30-cow herd in 1920 might have been considered a bit uppity. You know, what are you doing with 20 or 30 mm-hmm. cows, man? That's a big farm. So things change, and they change for real reasons. And Dan touches on that, and that's world competition for the price of protein.
Yeah, and so what happens with the dairy you produce, Dan?
Our milk goes to Klondike Cheese, which is located between Monroe and Argyle, and that's also a family-owned business. They're, I believe, in their fourth generation.
Right.
And historically, they were a Munster, Swiss, Havarti producer, and then in around 2001, they put in a very modern automated feta production line, which is at a very good time, as the increase in popularity of feta was just taking off. And then just in this past March, they fired up a Greek yogurt line. So they've been very progressive. And we're fortunate, and Ed knows this as well as anybody, that we're in Greene County, where it's a very still a very vibrant dairy market, cheese producing area. So there's good competition for our milk, profitable factories, good competitive pay prices. It's a good place to be.
What? And a lot of, Dan, a lot of intelligence down there. People who you can go to talk about almost anything and find out what's working and what isn't working.
Right, yes. And from the cheesemaker's perspective, it's quite a community, too,
right,
where they help each other out.
That's
a lot.
Right.
They won't step on each other's toes to take milk away from each other. So it's an interesting dynamic there, too.
Well, Dan, I'm glad you called. We're almost at a news break. So,
and say hello to Shelley for me.
Will do.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. So you knew each other from the...
I've done a story on Dan. He's mm-hmm. very interesting and progressive farmer. And if we have a moment or when we come back, I'd like to talk about that idea of progressive.
Well, tell me in the minute that we have before our news break, though... The health of the dairy industry in Wisconsin today?
You know, I am not an economist, so I really I think it's thriving. It's a huge part of our state's economy, growing as an exporter now too. But I can't tell you how healthy it is. But these farmers are so smart; they'll find a way to stay in business.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about Wisconsin dairy farms and farmers after we check the latest news. We are talking with Ed Janis, who is the author of the book Creating Dairyland, talking about how the dairy industry has influenced life in Wisconsin as we know it today. And we are also talking about his People of Rural Wisconsin project. And we are welcoming your input, your questions, your memories, whether you grew up on a dairy farm or currently on a dairy farm. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will continue to talk about how Wisconsin became America's Dairyland and how being America's Dairyland shaped life as we know it in Wisconsin. And we'll take more of your calls and questions and memories in just a few minutes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Friday, October 4th. Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. More than 60 years after its publication, Aldo Leopold's A Sand County Almanac continues to influence conversations about the relationship between people and the land. And it also inspired musician Tim Southwick Johnson, who set many of Leopold's themes and words to music. Today, Johnson shares his discovery of Leopold.
In 2010, I was performing at the Lake Geneva Conservancy fundraiser. And on a table, they had a stack of paperback Sand County almanacs. So I grabbed it and took it home and started reading it that evening. And wham, I was hooked.
Fog over the marsh. See the white ghost of a glacier.
I knew just vaguely about, you know, his history, and that was it. So I think I had read part of the book in high school. But beyond that, this was really pretty much my introduction to him. As I read through some of the early chapters, I just kept stumbling across these lines where I said, oh, that'd make a great line in a song right there. And I kept finding more and more, and I thought, well, I'll write a song.
Come on home.
I was very fortunate. I played a performance at the Leopold Foundation Center north of Baraboo. And after I got done, I was about ready to go, and they wondered where I was heading for the night, and they said, well, you can stay here if you want. And they threw the keys to me for the shack, which, you know, it was just getting dark, and so I drove over there and found the kitchen matches and lit the oil lamps and went down to the river and watched the cranes fly home for the night, just like you would expect in the book, and had a little fire out front. Kind of fantasized that maybe some of that wood was the good oak that he writes about, which is probably long gone, but had a really nice, restful night. Woke up crack of dawn the following morning and played a little music out front, of course, and that was my visit. The realization that a lot of the things that he wrote about are still there, and to experience it firsthand and just to be in that environment by yourself was kind of an eye-opener for me in that, you know, yeah, this is very real still, maybe more real now than ever. You know, music can really bring out emotions that I don't want to discount the written word, of course, but music is ancient, and even as Leopold writes about the cranes,
those clamoring cranes,
the sound of the woodcock in flight, all the birds in the great possession section, that's all music. And I think that spoke to him. And even the wind and the trees and all that, there's a rhythm to all that.
They bring life to this land. It's a sound of joy. Turn around the world.
If what I have done opens the eyes and ears of more people to his message, that's a great thing. And spreading the word about his land ethic and how we need to live lighter on the land is important. And I'm really honored to be, you know, just a tiny, tiny part of that.
Tim Southwick Johnson's latest album is Sand County Songs. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org. Well, wasn't that nice? Every Friday at this time, we talk about Wisconsin Life, and we talk about something special about Wisconsin. And this week, we are talking about the dairy industry, the dairy farm, since World Dairy Expo is happening in Madison this week and thousands upon thousands of dairy industry people are visiting and talking dairy, we thought this would be a nice time to talk about the importance of the Wisconsin dairy farmer and how we became known as America's Dairyland. We welcome your memories. We welcome your stories about life, past and present, on a dairy farm. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Ed Janis. He is the author of the book, Creating Dairyland, How Caring for Cows Saved Our Soil, Created Our Landscape, Brought Prosperity to Our State, and Still Shapes Our Way of Life. He is also the director of the People of Rural Wisconsin Project, which we'll talk a little bit more about again later in this half hour. But Ed, before we go back to the phones, while we were listening to those Aldo Leopold songs, you mentioned that that Aldo Leopold taught a short course for dairy farmers.
Yeah, the short course for dairy farmers is sort of the linchpin of the great progressive movement in dairying, where the sons of, now daughters, of course, the sons of dairy farmers or farmers in Wisconsin came to Madison during the winter to learn about science, to learn to think scientifically. Well, one of the teachers during short course was Aldo Leopold, and he taught nature courses, or courses about woodlands and how to make sure that the land is diversified. Because in those days, and today too, dairy farmers are particularly interested in preserving their land, and we would say today, sustaining it. Mm-hmm. But that was a very central tenet, and Aldo Leopold was a popular teacher there.
Yeah, and you just mentioned progressive movement.
Right.
Our caller before news, Dan, also mentioned being progressive. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I use progressive in the sort of traditional capital P sense of the word. The progressive movement was a movement of the Enlightenment. That is to say, introducing the ideas of science, modernity, industry, to all forms of life, agriculture in particular. So every dairy farmer I've ever met used to, or does, subscribe to a magazine called Progressive Farmer. And that doesn't mean just thinking about getting better. It means this whole configuration of intellectual skills that so typifies our Wisconsin dairy industry.
Let's take a call from Anita in Wisconsin Dells, who has been waiting. Thank you for waiting, Anita. You're on the air now.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Oh, this is such an interesting topic. The man who just spoke here makes me think about my life as a dairy farmer. I grew up on a little farm just outside of the Dells, a small farm. We had seven cows. Every cow had a name. It was a wonderful childhood. Of course, I went away to college, became a school teacher, and fortunately came back home one summer and married that wonderful Norwegian bachelor farmer that lived up the road who had cows, too, and we are farming today.
You're still farming?
We're still farming.
How many cows do you have now, Anita?
Well, more than I wish. We have about 400 now.
Okay,
and of course, we have two sons that both graduated from the university, and I guess we must have instilled a wonderful love of the land and farming, because they're both they have both come home and are farming
wonderful.
With us.
What do you, Anita? What do you think brought them home? What do they love? What makes them get up in the morning?
Well, I think they have always enjoyed working with animals. They have learned to love the land that grows our food. But they, as well as I, are concerned about the way dairy agriculture is going in Wisconsin. And I realize that we need the technology. We aren't going to have the 17 cows, probably.
Right, right.
But I think we need to think about how we want Wisconsin dairy to grow. Do we want to have one farmer milking all of the cows in Wisconsin? I worry about this because I think that families on the land that love the land, that walk the land, that know the land, will have a sustainable system which can carry on and support not only the wonderful dairy industry, but the community, the family businesses in the community. I don't see this as what we're doing today, and I really worry about it.
Yeah, well, Anita, you're certainly not alone in worrying about it. And I don't think at this point I could even see far enough into the future to give you much of an answer. I will point out, though, that in order to keep our land in agriculture, that is to say, to keep these rolling fields and keep farms there, we do need to keep pace with the modern world. And I'm not saying this is a good thing. We're not saying it's a bad thing. But it may be the thing. I mean, it may be, for example, your sons came home, but they needed a bigger farm to come home to because, I don't know, you said you had three of them, I think?
Two,
yeah.
I think.
Okay, two or three. Anyway, and so growth is just one of those natural human things, I guess. And so I would say you're right to worry, and yet don't worry too much because we've always figured this out.
Anita, thank you so much for sharing that. Anita sounds like a great voice of rural Wisconsin to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about you, Ed? You also, what is your background on a dairy farm?
It's a long story, so I won't make it very long. I had the great opportunity back in the early 1970s. I was involved with the Ovens of Brittany, the early restaurants here in Madison. And we owned a dairy farm, 30 cows, red barn, hilly fields, and I got the chance to go out there and learn the front end of a cow from the back end of a cow. So it was just 2 years, but I loved every minute of it, and when I say that to dairy farmers, I have to add that that means I really wasn't a dairy farmer. You
because
can't
you
love
really
every
loved
minute
it.
Of it.
You can't, yeah. You know, well, Anita was concerned.
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah.
like she had the same number of cows as our caller before news.
As Dan, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And you mentioned that Dan is doing something that may be a new trend mm-hmm. in the dairy industry. Talk about that.
Well, for the past 10 years, maybe 15 years, some farmers like Dan and a bunch of other people sort of got tired of continually working harder and harder and harder and harder and buying bigger and bigger and bigger tractors and plowing more and more and more land, and decided that maybe we could return to an older method of farming, which is pasturing. Now, in the old days, cows went out on pasture and they fed and they came back and then they went out again and they fought the flies and the rain and the heat. But now it's become very scientific. So Dan has these very improved pasture lands that he moves his cows into every other day or so. And they get about 30% of their nutrition, again, from pasture. And it's one of those things that I'm glad to see because I like to drive through the state and see cows out there.
I do, too.
And on Dan's farm, you see cows.
And I want to, we have another break to take, and we have other callers to go to with more memories or questions or thoughts about the dairy industry in Wisconsin. And I also want to talk a little bit about what Anita brought up, that that her farm and other farms help help the rural communities, the family businesses, and the the cheese factories and other things. And we can talk a little bit more about that too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 9 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Friday, October the 4th. We are talking with Ed Janis. He is the author of Creating Dairyland, How Caring for Cows Saved Our Soil, Created Our Landscape, Brought Prosperity to Our State, and Still Shapes Our Way of Life in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I want to get back to some more calls, but Anita also talked about the businesses that the dairy industry sustains in our small rural communities, the family businesses, the cheese factories, and that sort of thing. That's true. I mean, it's not just the dairy farmer.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know what the percentage is of rural life that's dependent on dairying, particularly, is quite high, of course. And that's changing as everything gets bigger. The towns get further apart. The little towns die up and dry out.
You, though, are some of these voices of dairy of rural Wisconsin. There's a renaissance of sorts in craft cheese making, isn't there?
Oh, well, yes, the artisanal cheese thing. It's huge. I mean, that is to say, it's getting a lot of publicity. It's very, very, very popular. It's written about quite a bit. How much it actually contributes to the state income is a different question. But it is something that excites these older cheesemakers who now see an outlet for their creativity.
Let's take some other calls.
Yeah, sure.
We have Jeff in Fox Lake. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning.
Morning, Jeff.
Yes, I was just going to, make a few comments. Anita kind of brought up some of the same questions I was going to. But Ed, I got to take a minute and say I got your book. I haven't been through it cover to cover, but looked through it, and it's very nice that someone can put some of that stuff and get it recorded.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, and I guess I'm milking my own cows right now. And I don't, not just a dairy farmer, but I'm also a dairy grazer. I'm glad you brought that
part up. Oh, good, yeah.
I think that's still the most natural way to go, best for the environment. But on the economic end, which Joy was bringing up, we talk about progression and where the industry is headed in the future. And, for those of us who, I don't want to put too negative a spin on, but it that type of growth can put a lot of pressure on the small existing family farm, too, just for the sheer fact of land availability. I know my situation here with where we lost some land last year, we had rented, but I simply couldn't compete with the corn bean industry that's just booming in the past couple of years. So
I hear you. It's
interesting aspects going on that I guess our city cousins won't understand.
Yeah. And I hear the milking going on in the background. So how big is your herd, Jeff?
I got, we're at 60 cows here.
Yeah.
60 cows. Wow, that's a wonderful number. Do you have a pretty, you know the girls pretty well? Are you in a stanchion barn?
Well, I just wanted, you're right. Mine have names. I think when you're getting that 400 cow range, you may
Yeah,
not
you
have
can't,
names.
Of course, right.
And those guys aren't actually milking their own. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I'm telling you what I'm doing.
Right, no, exactly. I often ask dairy farmers, old dairy farmers especially, when I interview them, if all their cows had names. And you get a lot of different answers. Some of them say, oh, heck no. And some of them say, well, we had some pet cows that had names. And then some of them say, yeah, I knew every name. So it varies.
I dated a dairy farmer when I was in high school, and I had a cow named after me. So.
I hope it stayed in the herd for a while.
I never know what happened. But anyway, Jeff, thank you very
much.
Thanks, Jeff. Amy in Chautauqua is with me. Hello, Amy. Go ahead. You're on the air. Amy, are you there?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Hi.
Hi.
Joy, how are you?
Good.
Good. I'm really enjoying the show. I just wanted to say that I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and when I was a teenager, I had the opportunity to live and work on a dairy farm in Vermont for a while.
Wow.
And I I was just amazed, being a Brooklyn girl, at the physical labor involved in dairy farming, farming in general, but dairy farming, as well as the commitment of having to be there every day to milk the animals and get up so early in the morning. I mean, you're really tied to the farm. You can't easily take vacations or go away, even for a day. And I was really, it just gave me such an appreciation for the industry in general, because of my firsthand witnessing that. And I just think urban dwellers just really don't have an appreciation for what goes into it at the level of an individual farmer.
It's so true. I want to tell you a quick story, Amy, because I think you'll appreciate this. I knew a farmer, very successful, progressive farmer, and he worked awfully hard and had a very prosperous farm. And I said to him one day, gee, you could go to Chicago and make oodles of money. And he looked at me and he said, well, yeah, but I could never buy what I have here. And I think that's what keeps a lot of dairy farmers on the land.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Amy. We're running so short of time. Let me go to Dan in Fond du Lac next. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Yes, Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. I live adjacent to a farm. It's a big farm. It's not a mega dairy yet, but they do supply the mega dairies. And they've been, over the years, have been destroying the hedgerows, taking down all the hedgerows. And this is such a destructive thing. They hedgerows are an avenue of, it's a road between woodlots for the wildlife. They do cut down on wind erosion.
Yeah.
Are we going to end up with a dust bowl like they had back in the 30s?
Well, I don't know. Do you know, Ed, about this?
Not much, except to say that it's not an old complaint, not a new complaint, forgive me. I've interviewed farmers from the 1930s, and they say the same thing, that the neighbors would always take down, and they'd put the cows in the woodlands, and they'd ruin the woodlands. And that's what the whole land reclamation business was about. And but there are also strong economic pressures for these guys.
Well, you know what? I can't believe we are already out of time. Doesn't an hour go fast?
Wow.
You know, we'll have to have you come back and maybe talk more about the Voices of Rural Wisconsin
Love
project.
To. Thank you.
Because I know that's an ongoing thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll do that. Thanks a lot for being
Thanks,
here.
Thanks, Joy.
Ed Janis is the author of Creating Dairyland and director of the People of Rural Wisconsin Project. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We are going to talk about the new fall movie season coming up after the news. And then after 8 o'clock, it's our Friday Week in Review. We will talk about all the top stories of the week, especially the partial government shutdown that's going on. That's the Week in Review after 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.